Okay, so my name is Paul Ruvolo. I'm a professor of computer science at Olin College. I've met many of you before in various contexts. I've known Jerry for quite a while. Jerry and I have worked together in a class I teach on accessibility a couple times in the past. What I want to talk about today is some work I've been doing for actually quite a while. It's actually been about 6 years now in sort of the space of indoor mobility and orientation of mobility for people who are blind. And actually, when I first started this line of research, actually the very first thing I did was actually attend a Vibug meeting. It was about 6 years ago. It was one of the summer meetings in 2014. I remember coming here to meet some folks and ask some questions. So, the big area that we work in is sort of the combination of smartphones and indoor mobility. So, as you all know, smartphones have a lot of amazing apps that enable accessibility in various ways. In terms of mobility, most of the commonly used apps are for outdoor navigation, right? Things like your Google Maps and your Blind Square and your Soundscape and all of those apps are great tools for getting around outdoors. And there are a few apps also for indoors, but the choices are much more limited. What we decided to do was to explore how new technologies in mobile phones could be used for indoor mobility. The main technology we've been sort of using is something called augmented reality technology. Maybe people are a little bit familiar. It's definitely a buzzword that goes around a lot. But the idea is, how can you take virtual content and sort of intermix it with the physical world is really the idea of augmented reality. So we have our normal everyday reality, and we want to sort of populate it with sort of additional sort of virtual content. One of the main ways this shows up is, for instance, there might be a game where you enter a room and there's a virtual character that would be sort of rendered on a video feed that you're collecting through your camera, right? So the smartphone manufacturers became pretty interested in integrating this type of technology, primarily for sort of gaming and entertainment purposes. Those are sort of the first applications, but there's also other things coming out, like I've seen sort of laying out spaces and things of that nature. So in order to put virtual content into the physical world, you need to be able to track the motion of the phone really precisely. So if you imagine like a virtual cat or something, if I want to be able to sort of interact with this virtual cat as if it were really there, I would need to be able to move around in space, and the phone needs to understand how it's moving in space so that it can render the view of the cat from the appropriate angle. Okay, so I have no interest in virtual cats in my own work at all, but what I am interested in is taking the fact that phones now have the ability to estimate their motion in 3D space with pretty high accuracy. So, given that capability, what can we do with this? That's really the jumping off point for a lot of this work. Based on those ideas, we've been working to try to sort of explore various concepts related to how we could use that for orientation mobility. What we've been doing lately is we've developed an app called Clue. The idea with Clue is essentially recording and navigating along routes. Somebody has the app, they come into a building, and they may have some sort of path in the building that they would like to record so they can navigate it at a later point in time. So in the simplest version of the app, you simply hit the record button and then you walk to your destination. So if you've never been there before, maybe you have a sighted guide with you or somebody else who can kind of lead you there. And then you hit the stop button. And at that point, the phone has basically tracked its motion through the building with a really high accuracy and sort of recorded. Imagine leaving sort of a trail of breadcrumbs as you walk down your path. And then later, when you'd like to go back, you hit the play button, and the phone will essentially give you directions in order to navigate back along that same path.
Does Clue at all use the camera then, or does it just use this augmented?
The augmented reality feature that I'm talking about, the way that it works is it uses a combination of two types of sensors. It uses sort of motion sensing, so gyroscopes and accelerometers. So like the same type of thing that can tell the orientation of your phone and also the rotation of your phone. That's sort of the motion sensors. And then the other one is the camera. Even though we're not directly necessarily utilizing the camera, well, we do show it to the user. So if you were low vision, you could see the camera feed. But the cameras actually helps it estimate where it's moving in space. This is sort of an app where you have to have the app out. You have to have your phone held in your hand while you're navigating, which I think is definitely a big downside of the app, but unfortunately, that's sort of like the only way to use it at the moment. I imagine Apple at some point hopefully will come out with some sort of maybe head-mounted kind of smart glasses or something where you could do it hands-free, but currently it'd be like you'd be holding the phone while you're navigating. When you navigate back, you sort of get a combination of, you know, voice directions. So it might say something like, you know, turn left and go, you know, 20 feet, or it might, you can also get sort of just, you know, beeping noises when you're sort of pointing in the right direction, and also haptic feedback. So all of those different sources of feedback to you can sort of be integrated, and it will sort of lead you back down the path. There's sort of a series of sort of goals that it sets along the path, and you sort of go to the first one, then the second one, then the third one, then the fourth, all the way back. So that's sort of the basic idea of the app. So when we first released it, all we had was a feature where you can record a route and then go back along that same route. And then, of course, the first thing that everybody asked us was saving routes, right? So that was like the big thing. Can we save routes? And the answer is you can. And we have a few different ways to do that. One of the big challenges for saving routes is, I was talking about how the phone is sort of estimating how it's moving through space. So it's good at estimating sort of how it moves relative to where it was before, but it doesn't necessarily have any sort of landmarks to know where it is in any absolute sense. Like when you're outside and you turn on your GPS app, you're getting these signals from these satellites, right? So these are sort of, if you will, landmarks, and GPS always can reference to these satellites to know where it is in space. This augmented reality technology has really no absolute like sense of where it is. It just knows how it's moving relative to where it was. So in order to save routes, what you really need to do is you have to have some way to take your phone and sort of align its sense of where it is with where it thought it was when you first recorded the route, if that makes any sense. So you might have like a path, but if you don't know where the path starts or how the path is oriented relative to where you are right now, it doesn't really do you much good. There's a couple different methods of doing that. The one that's currently in the app is a sort of a physical alignment mechanism where you actually take your phone and you have to have identified some sort of mark, like landmark that you can return to on your own with confidence, and you would take the phone and basically push it up against that landmark. Okay, so maybe good choices are like the frame of a door. So imagine you're like entering a building. Maybe right as you enter the building, you could set the landmark there. So you would record the route with that landmark, and then we want to navigate back along it again. You would need to return to that position, push your phone in that same position, and do the alignment procedure. So if you do that, it does enable you to align to the route and then follow it again. We've been experimenting with different ways in like our sort of beta version of the app to do the alignment. We have one now that uses where you don't have to press your phone against the wall, but you can sort of take a picture of the scene in front of you. So you kind of hold the phone facing up and just generally ahead of you, and it can do an alignment based on the two pictures. So it has a picture from when you first recorded the route and when you're now trying to follow it, and it tries to understand what is the sort of offset between those two pictures in order to align you. So that one's kind of nice because it's a little bit more like, easier to use. It's just a little bit nicer. So we're still working around with that.
Once you create a route and successfully navigate it, can you reverse it?
Yes. So the answer is you can. Yes, you absolutely can. It works a little bit less well in reverse than it does forward, but you can also do that. We've also recently added support for sending routes to other people that they can navigate.
Do you need a Wi-Fi connection for this to work? It sort of sounds like it's all sort of self-contained.
It doesn't actually use any cloud-based services of any kind. So it's all, it can be all, you can have airplane mode on, it will work fine. Yeah.
Does it matter the length of the route?
Yeah, it does. So the thing is, it really isn't very good. I would say about a short route, about like 150 to 200 feet is about as good as it could do. If you're in a building with, like this building right here that we're in, I was able to easily record, before I walked in, I recorded a route from like the entrance on Mass Avenue to this room, and it worked fine. If you had like 500 foot to 1,000 foot route with lots of twists and turns, see lots of like wide open areas, it's probably not likely to work very well. It kind of has its sort of sweet spot of like relatively short routes, especially in things and like hallways, it's like usually really good, but it does sort of depend on the circumstances.
Can you put in markers for landmarks along the way? Like if you were to go from
That's awesome.
The front door to this room and want to know where the bathroom is.
We haven't added the support for that, but we could potentially do that. And that could potentially even increase the accuracy of the system too, if you're able to align to a thing along the way.
Thank you.
Well, I was just going to ask that. How do you insert the notes that the door frame is a landmark that you're looking for?
Basically, the phone, all the phone really is tracking is its movement in space. It's not tracking any characteristics of the environment at all. So what you would do is you would just say, all right, I'm going to align to this door frame. So you just say, okay, I'm asserting that I'm pushing my phone against the door frame, and you hit a button. And then next time you would come back and you would have to put your phone in that same position. But the app is not looking for the door frame in any sense. All it's doing is like it's saying, like, I trust that the user is putting the phone in the same position that it was in before.
There's no voice recorder track on this.
Oh, well, you can record like we do have the ability to put a voice note, because what we started realizing was it's like pretty hard to remember where you put your, like if you recorded a route, it's like, where did I actually put my phone? So we started like adding support for things like that to give a little bit more context for the route.
Is it going to make a difference to the angle in which you take the picture?
It doesn't matter that much. It matters that it's vertical. So we have a built-in thing where it basically, if the phone is not held vertically enough, it'll actually be like, your phone is not vertical, like, please tilt it back. If you think about the matching problem, like, what it's really doing is, like, if you take two pictures, it has to have some objects. Like, imagine you take a picture when you record the route and one where you're trying to load the route back in. You need some sort of overlap between those two images. Like, you need to be able to see something in both images that's sort of common. And if you think about the sort of field of view of a camera, I don't even know what the, maybe it's like 100 degrees or something. So you just have to, like, be pointing within enough, like, close enough that, like, it'll get some things in common.
Let's
say there was, in my starting point, in that starting point picture, when I first take that recording, there is like a couple of chairs, and then later they are no longer there.
Yeah.
Is that still?
It'll probably still work. So what it's doing is it tries to find a bunch of sort of, they call them correspondences. So it's basically like a pixel in one image that corresponds to a pixel in another image. Mm-hmm. So it might, and if it's missing something, that's okay. It just has to have enough matches. And it's usually pretty good, even if stuff has moved, like in the same thing, it's usually pretty good about correcting for that. But the physical mechanism is a little bit more robust in that sense, because it's, you know, maybe we could do a combination. And we're also experimenting, although this is like even farther in the future, with adding like special like tags to buildings. So I don't know if anybody's ever used like a Bluetooth beacon system before, something like that. Those are a common way to do things, where you sort of add this like these like essentially Bluetooth beacons into an environment, and it gives you sort of a sense of a landmark. With this type of augmented reality technology, there's these special signs you can print out and like affix to the wall, like hang up on a wall basically, just as big as like a sheet of paper. And they're easily identifiable by a camera as it's moving past. And those things can also serve to create sort of landmarks within an environment. That's what we're mostly working on right now, is sort of creating an app where people can deploy those markers in an environment and then sort of map out a space, including a bunch of different points of interest in the space. And then whenever anybody goes back, all they need to do is pass by one of these like signs, and they'll be localized in the environment. They can navigate where they want. So it's kind of like the Bluetooth beacon idea, but it just has different set of trade-offs. Basically, it would be essentially free to deploy. You just have to print out some signs. Obviously, you have to hang them in the environment, so you'd have to have the ability, like who's ever doing this would have to be willing to put those up. And then it shouldn't take more than, you know, an hour or two to sort of walk around in a space and add your points of interest. So those are some of the ways we can imagine getting sort of more robust and kind of building on that.
Are you still doing the same way of testing?
Yeah, we have like a thumbs up, thumbs down. You know, one thing about this app is, since it doesn't really require any infrastructure, we've been able to deploy it and have people use it from all over the world, which has been cool. But I don't feel like I'm getting a great sense of exactly what, like, how it's going for people. Like, we have this thumbs up, thumbs down, but we've done a lot of stuff with folks at the Carroll Center, where we've had like students working with us over the summer to like test the app and suggest new features. And that was a really great experience to really dig in and understand like how to improve it. I want to find ways to like coordinate more with like the people around the world that are using the app to like understand how we can make it better. But so far I haven't been able to build great structures for that.
Is there any thoughts of maybe having like a community for sharing routes? So for instance, if you route from the front door of this building to this room, is there some place you could like upload that and share it with people so they could?
We definitely thought about that. We do have, so like I was mentioning, we have the like peer-to-peer sharing, so you could, I think that would be cool. We're a little bit, it brings in a lot of additional like
overhead.
Yeah, and not really technical, more just like there's sort of this like idea of like, you know, vetting these routes and like try, I don't know, there's a lot of things we were a little bit didn't feel like we had enough resources to really do a good job of it, so we kind of like steered away from it for now, but I think it would be cool to revisit at some point in the future.
Well, is there a cost for the app?
Oh no, it's free. I work on it usually during the summers. I get grants or I get money from Olin to like support the work. We work on it for the summer, try to build more features, try to keep the pot warm during the year when the students are busy with classes and kind of keep going. But yeah, there's no sort of profit motive attached to it or anything of that nature. So the goal is to keep it free and have people keep using it. And yeah, just kind of figure out like what are other ways in which we can leverage this technology to be helpful to folks. And I think working with the community has been like the best way to do that. Obviously, that's of course, you know, the bedrock of any work in this field. So, and we were able to discover, and build interesting features. Like we just released a feature where the phone can, basically the phone's always giving directions based on the way that it's pointing. But if the phone is not pointing straight ahead of you, it might be like a little bit like off. Like if it's pointing to the side, it's going to be giving you directions as if you were like rotating in that direction. So based on feedback from actually people that work at the Carroll Center, we're able to like design a feature that can correct for that offset and then give you feedback based on the direction that you're actually facing rather than the direction the phone is facing.
When I use a recording, do I still need the camera?
You do, yeah. So that's the thing. It's really, I mean, I would love there be a way to not have the camera.
But I mean, I understand when I make the recording, I have to use the camera, but then...
Oh, then why would you need it after the fact?
Yeah, if it makes this, whatever, map.
Right.
Know,
yeah, so the reason, yeah, that's a really good question. So, so currently the reason you would need to have the camera out is, so if you have the phone in your pocket, you can really only use the motion sensors of the phone to detect how you're moving.
Okay.
So that's the problem. The problem is these motion sensors, while they're good and they're pretty good and powerful, and it's amazing that they can have them on a phone essentially, but they are very susceptible to errors. And with systems like this, as errors start to build in the system,
sure,
they tend to kind of become even more and more, like introduce more and more inaccuracy. So the camera is necessary for keeping that down. I mean, I've read a few like papers that try to suggest that there's some way to have a really fancy system to process the sensor data from just the motion sensors to try to get pretty accurate motion, but that's all sort of like research frontier type stuff, not something that's really like available in a consumer gadget. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just I feel like eventually Apple will make something. I don't know. I'm not sure. And maybe it'll be a boon for accessibility. That's what I'm kind of hoping. I mean, it feels like when Apple, you know, these technologies get introduced maybe for mainstream uses, they often have a big benefit for accessibility. So, but I know that that type of device, I mean, I've heard that it's coming out within a year for at least like 3 years. So it's hard to say. I know there's like the Bose glasses are pretty cool. I don't know if anybody has those, but those aren't quite as powerful as you would need to do something like this.
If I am recording a route, how exactly do I have to hold the phone? Do I have to be very precise in how I'm holding it in front of me?
It actually doesn't really matter how you hold it in front of you. We've noticed that it works best when it's pointing straight ahead and basically like the camera is sort of kind of not pointing at the ground, not pointing at the ceiling, kind of just pointing straight ahead. But it can handle a certain amount of like, you know, it could be pointing down a little bit or up a little bit or to the side a little bit.
Sorry, you're pointing the camera ahead of you. So essentially the phone is parallel to your body.
Yeah, exactly. So imagine the camera like essentially pointing out from like your chest or something like down in the direction that you're moving. The screen would be facing towards the user.
Okay,
and the back camera would be facing like in the direction that you're walking, which, you know, is good because then you can sort of use the voiceover controls and or if you're low vision, you could use those types of things. And like, you know, we've gotten different reports from users how to best use the app. Like sometimes people will hold it like with like kind of braced against their body. So that kind of helps it from, makes it a little bit easier to hold and prevents it from moving around too much. But yeah, it can be pretty resilient to that, but it does make it a little bit more accurate when it's pointing generally straight ahead.
Does it give you any sort of feedback if you're going off the route?
It does. It's pretty like it's a pretty simple scheme right now. Like I think we could improve it probably, but The way it works now is when you're facing the right direction, it will give you feedback. When you are not in the right direction, currently it does nothing. So it's basically like if you use the app, you'll essentially feel almost like a heartbeat where it's like when you're on the track, it's like giving you like a steady like pulse of like haptic feedback. Your phone's like subtly vibrating, or you'll hear like I could play a clip, but like you'll hear like a tiny like bell, not a bell, sort of like noise every periodically. And when you're off track, you just hear nothing. And then when you're off track, there's a button that's like the get directions button. And if you hit the get directions button, it'll be like, you know, turn right and go, you know, turn right to get back on track, basically. Another thing we've thought about a lot is doing some sort of outdoor navigation as well. I mean, there's already a lot of obviously great stuff in that space, so we wouldn't want to reinvent the wheel. But potentially you can use the outdoor part of a route to like align you to an indoor part of a route. There's like some interesting things we've thought about with that.
This is using the Apple like phone kit, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the AR kit is the name of the library. Yeah, so I mean, what's cool about this technology is that the feat of engineering needed to do the position tracking is really crazy, and it's really not something that anybody but the sort of phone manufacturer could have like pulled off. And so the fact that you can just like tap into that motion tracking part of the infrastructure and use it is really cool. So we built off that, and then a lot of the work has just been like making the app usable and, you know, and adding addition and figuring out how to like take that raw data and like post-process it and things of that nature.
When I had tried it too, it seemed like lighting was an important...
Yeah, the lighting can matter. Yeah, if it's like really dark, it also doesn't really work very well. So, you know, there are like limitations. So it's a type of technology where like you kind of need decent lighting and you need to be in an environment that has like at least some sort of like visual texture to it, which I realize is not necessarily easy to assess yourself necessarily. But
what do you mean by visual texture?
I mean, almost any environment, it's fine. But imagine, like, if you're in a giant room, the floor is white, and the walls were white, and the ceiling was white, and the tables were white, or something like that. That would, like, not have visual texture. So the camera would be trying to understand how it's moving, but essentially there's really no definition to, like, the world, so it can't really tell where it's moving. But, like, in an environment like this, like the floor has a lot, you know, the floor has, you know, texture to it, there's like, you know, the chairs y'all are sitting on, like that's like a type of texture, visual texture for the camera, like all the tables. So this room it would work really well in.
So in terms of lighting, since it compares pixels, let's say I'm making the recording when there is bright daylight, and then when I come back, it's like 7 o'clock. And
right.
Like lamp light, you know?
Yeah.
Does that matter?
Not really, because it's not doing the comparisons between the two times. It's usually doing the comparison of the video frame at like 0.01 seconds and 0.02 seconds. Like each frame is collected really close together in time, and it just needs to be able to track in that tiny amount of time. But you are right about at the initial alignment. If you use a camera, you would need to it could need to be similar, but for like the motion tracking, it's not necessary.
So, Paul, is it your experience that you almost always need a sighted guide to create this thing in the first place?
I mean, that was one of the ways we said it could be done. The other way we talked about it was, well, actually, now that you can share routes, it's actually, there could be a whole other sort of category of like people who are blind sharing routes with other people who are blind. If you're familiar with the building, you could record a route. There's nothing about being sighted that is necessary to record the route. It's really just a question of like being able to go to the particular place. The other use case we thought initially was like, you know, sometimes a route is like easier to navigate in one direction than the other. Like there's sort of like an asymmetry where like, I don't know, like the use case we always talked about was like, if I'm sitting in the middle of a conference room, it's probably easier for me to like get up from the table and like get out of the room than it would be to like go through the door of the conference room and get back to my chair, right? Like the sort of the landmarks are different. So in that case, you could imagine actually navigating out of it completely by yourself and then coming back to it with guidance from the app and getting some benefit, even though you were able to actually go yourself out of the environment.
So you really need a start and an end.
You need currently you need a start and an end point. Yeah, that's how everything's based off of that concept.
This thing, in other words, I got this room from somebody else. It's inside a shopping mall.
Yeah.
It tells them how to get to McDonald's. But I don't want to get to McDonald's. I want to get to Best Buy, which is like 3/4 of the way to McDonald's.
Yeah.
I have to turn left instead of turning right. Is there any way to make use of most of the existing route that someone else has created?
Currently, no. But I think as we move more towards this concept of having these like tags up in an environment, we can start supporting more features like that. That project I call like invisible map project. That's like what I'm calling it. So in that case, you would basically like somebody could walk around the mall for like a long time, and then it would be able to like understand where the like branching points are. Like if it walked by the same place twice, it would know that there was like a branch point there. And then you could potentially do sort of like navigation along that. You could say, you know, if I want to go to like, yeah, the Best Buy instead of the McDonald's, I would know that there's like a junction point that I could go to and then turn off. But that is pretty challenging, and that would probably only work if we had these like tags up in an environment. I don't think it would work with like just the tracking without any infrastructure at all. Like, it would be really difficult for that to work.
How badly, say in a mall, for example,
yeah,
you're trying to map a route. And if you're in a crowded mall, are you going to be able to map that route with all sorts of people around you?
Yeah, you could, actually. But the thing in the mall, the big challenge would just be like the length of the route. Like, you know, if you were walking like across an entire mall, it would almost definitely not work to come back along that route. Or like as you were walking, you would encounter something that didn't make sense. We have some ideas about how you might improve that. These are things we haven't really progress too much, but one of the ideas we had was like, you know, when people are navigating, 90% of the time you like don't really need the phone to tell, even if you're going along like a route that you might not be familiar with, like for long periods of a route you might not need any guidance at all. For instance, like you're going down a hallway, you don't need a phone to tell you how to go down a hallway, right? Like that's very, you know, traditional O&M skills will be fine for that. So one thing we've thought about, we have this feature where you can basically tell the phone that you're like on the right track and actually use the fact that you know where you're going to actually correct where the phone thinks you're going, if that makes any sense.
Does it change the rest of the route?
Yeah, and basically imagine the route. It's like about might be like off by a few degrees.
Like you're driving with GPS, we calculate.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be like, it'd be the same path, but it would just sort of like rotate the route slightly so that like even though it thought you were off track, it would now have you on track. And that's actually can be really useful to going longer distances. But I don't know. I haven't quite figured out the like sort of interface and how that's all going to work. So it's sort of kind of something we cooked up in the lab and never really try it out at this point, but hopefully soon we'll get some folks to test it.
What's the, because I think it said it would tell you within 3 or 4 feet.
I walked in through the door. I put my back, there's like, once you go through the door that's like furthest to the right, I walked in and I put my back against a large column. There's
okay.
Like a big column.
Yes.
And then I pointed the camera ahead of me and I, anyway, yeah, so I put my back against the column, I took a picture pointing out, and then I proceeded to walk to this conference room.
Right.
And then just to test it, I walked back to the front, I walked in the building again, mm-hmm. I pointed it, and it got me like, you know, within a foot easily of the where I ended the route before. Obviously, like, it depends. Again, this is actually like this building is actually a pretty ideal environment.
Yeah, because it's all, there's not a lot of twists and turns.
Yeah, the twists and turns,
like,
and
angles
it's,
and stuff to hang.
Yeah, and there's like, you're mostly, when you navigate to this conference room, you're mostly navigating in like a hallway. Hallways tend to be the best. Like large open spaces are the most challenging.
Yeah. So the foyer when you come into the building, it would be really challenging. The main
it could
area
probably,
there.
Yeah, like it could probably do it for, like
yeah.
in
South
that
Station.
Area.
Yeah. How would it handle South Station?
Yeah. Like so things like that, it probably wouldn't really be. I mean, it could get you like through the foyer for a while, but it may have a little bit of inaccuracy as you leave the foyer, so then it mm-hmm. might accumulate over the rest of the route.
When you walk in this building, when you're in the foyer, how does it handle like there's a few different hallways? Like you could veer a little to the left or you could take the hallway that's to the right. How does it?
Yeah, so when you first come in, you put your back against this column and take the picture. From those two pictures, it could probably align itself to within a degree, like a single degree of like heading. And then it would say, it would know sort of from where I am right now, I need to turn at a particular angle and go in a direction. And so it would be precise enough to not go down the wrong hallway. I guess if you had like two hallways that were like really, really close together, then it's possible it could get confused. But yeah, I mean, for like the setup here, it's no problem at all.
There's all different types of tags, and to get like a mall or something to put these in is obviously a cost factor. And I don't know whether April tags or what.
There are
tags.
They're actually tags. Exactly April tags.
April tags.
You're familiar with this,
yeah.
this idea.
I'm a little familiar with it. Yeah.
So the April tags, these are the special types of patterns. I think, you know, depending on which ones you use, I think there's like 500 different patterns or something. But yeah, you're right. Like, if this started to scale, you would need a lot of thinking about, you know, how do you keep track of where these things are and things of that nature. I guess the biggest cost to putting that up would probably be beyond just the, like, having to be willing to, like, have them in an environment. Is just, like, how do you, like, securely sort of attach them to
right.
the wall? I think that's... While they have advantages, like, they don't need batteries, like, you know, you don't need to purchase any hardware. I guess the big thing is just how do you attach them to a wall? We've done, like, vinyl stickers at Olin.
Obviously, the other thing this is dependent on is the Apple kit. So are they improving it all the time?
They are, actually. So especially, and I will actually say, especially as the phones get newer, they're actually getting much better. So, like, the iPhone, like, 11, I've actually noticed it's, like, quite a bit better because it has, like, that really wide angle camera. They're kind of guarded. They don't really tell you what they're doing, but I've read other people suggesting that the wide angle camera is improving the tracking. So yeah, it seems to, like, just generally get better with time, but it is basically a black box. It's just hard to know exactly what they're doing inside of that. So that's one of the challenges.
And does this only work with
iOS. Android has a similar thing. I haven't developed the Android version just because it's just a lot of work to, like, do it. It's just I'm spending my resources more on, like, continuing development of the iOS version than to do the Android version. I guess if I had, like, the money to hire a programmer for, like, 3 months or something, they could probably do it pretty easily.
But, well, the other thing is, at least still here in the States, I would say 99% of blind people are using.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it would be more for, like, international. The user group is, like, fairly small. Like, it's probably something like 50 people a day use the app or something like that around the world. I mean, I think the only other main things we have now are that, like, visual landmark thing where you take a picture. That's, like, one thing. Generally, like, the pace of updates slows down during the year because students are busy with their classes and stuff. So that's, I guess, one of the downsides of it not being, like, sort of a company is, like, it's hard to keep the momentum that we might otherwise if we could have, like, full-time people working on it.
Right.
All right. Well, it was really great speaking to you all. I really appreciate you having me here. Cool. Thank you.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Thanks.